Welcome to the Power Kid Podcast, the premier and longest running podcast focused on the modern toy and entertainment industry. Power Kid is an award-winning design and development firm, and we are a proud member of the Adventure Media and Events Podcast Network family. Adventure Media is the publisher of your favorite industry publications, including The Toy Book, The Toy Insider, and The Pop Insider. I am your host, Phil Albritton, and I bring you great conversations with talented people making amazing products for kids. Toys, books, games, TV, movies, I bring them to you here every episode. Welcome aboard. Hello, 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 Power Kids, and welcome to another Power Kid podcast. Guys, every week it is my honor, privilege, and joy to come on here and bring you great conversations with great people all over the world making great things for kids. I am excited about today's conversation. My guest is John Papa. Let me introduce you to him. John is an award-winning producer, director, and composer, and he's the co-founder, director, and executive producer at Masamoto Media. Recruited by Hasbro to build and establish the company's in-house Hasbro Studios, he oversaw their continued growth and success, producing and directing hundreds of television commercials and videos for iconic Hasbro brands. Now at Masamoto, he brings his love of kids and toys to create media for some of the biggest brands on the planet in multiple categories. Great stuff. John, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Phil. I'm really excited to be here with you. I know we tried for a long time, but we finally made it.
It is a pleasure to have you on. Yes, you've been on my list for a while, and I'm excited about this conversation. You know, anyone that loves combination of toys and media, that's the heart of me. So we've got a lot to talk about and really excited about it. But let's begin in the beginning. How did you come to be involved in the toy industry?
Honestly, it was completely by accident. I mean, I wasn't looking to get into it in any way at all. I was living in New York City and, I was working in production and primarily in set construction and, that sort of thing. And, wound up producing some things and, you know, I had my audio background, but I was in New York City because I was a musician and I was a bass player and I'd worked as a studio musician. And I, you know, us musicians, we have to eat, so we have to find something that pays the bills. So I was working in production in New York City, and that's how I fed myself and allowed me to keep doing my music thing for a while. But it was going along great. Everything was fine. Then I wound up getting in a pretty bad motorcycle accident while my wife was pregnant with our son. And I found myself in a long recovery, and Hasbro came to me through someone I knew there. They were going to start a studio. They were kind of looking for a jack of all trades, someone who had some, you know, art direction, some audio, some video production knowledge to kind of go in and start shaping this idea that they had to create this studio inside the company, which was at that point, nobody did this. It wasn't done.
Right, right.
So, you know, I talked to my wife about it and, you know, I'm on crutches for a long time and was looking at a long recovery, like I said, and I'm living on a third floor walk up in Manhattan. And, you know, we said, you know what? Maybe Rhode Island's not such a bad idea. So so I went up. I had my my first interview. I went up. I walked in on crutches and had an interview. I guess it was a pretty good one because they decided to hire me. And I was there for almost 8 years.
And there it is. Between set construction and working in the video industry and then your music, were there early projects that you worked on that sort of prepared you for a world in toys? And then once you got there, what surprises did you find? How was the toy industry maybe different than you thought it was as an outsider looking in?
Well, the first thing I did that kind of got me into that was for Good Morning America or the Today Show, which was for Hasbro. They were doing some kind of thing at one of those shows. I can't remember which one it was. And I wound up, designing and building a cool set for that to take place on. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, it was at FAO Schwartz, but it's been so long, I can't remember. I just can't place it. But what surprised me was not so much the toy thing, but just working in corporate America was probably my biggest shock, because I never did that before. So it was like, you know, it was really a new experience for me to just go into a corporate environment and work that way. Because, you know, I was just completely not accustomed to it. I mean, if I, you know, I had my crews of people that I'd work with, and, you know, if there was a problem with somebody, or I didn't like you, or you didn't like me, well, guess what? You weren't there the next time. So, you know, but when you're there and you're in corporate America, you're with a group of people, you're expected to, get what you can out of everybody and move on. And I mean, you know, one thing I think I've always been pretty good at doing is galvanizing a group of people to at least run in the same direction. So, you know, I did okay in that respect. But yeah, I mean, just corporate America in general was a little tough for me. About the first 2 years, I was constantly sitting across somebody at a desk, you know, saying, hey, you know, maybe you shouldn't do that, or you shouldn't say that, or whatever. But honestly, it was a good experience. It was good for me. I always said that Hasbro was my master's degree. You know, I learned so much from some of the most brilliant people I've ever been able to spend time with there.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because not only were you entering corporate America, but you were involved in creating something really new for the industry and new for Hasbro, Hasbro Studios. What were the challenges there? What was the vision of Hasbro Studios at that time? And tell us about some of the projects that you worked on.
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, it was, you know, Brian Goldner really, this was something he really championed from the get-go, was creating this studio in-house. He saw very early on that content was going to be everything, and that entertainment was going to be everything. In the toy industry. And, you know, he proved himself to be 100% correct there.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, so they wanted to get in early and start creating content. And, you know, that turned into a television network and everything else that came out of that. But, you know, challenges were, you know, hey, we went in, we put that space, we were given where they used to make G.I. Joes, basically, you know, years ago, a large area there. And, you know, through the, you know, Terry Scott, who was another person at Hasbro, who was a big champion of this, we set to working with the internal engineers at Hasbro and the external architects designing and laying out and building that space into what it still is today. And it's still, you know, at the time, I guarantee it was probably one of the biggest stages, you know, from any kind of corporate sense on the East Coast. It really was was and still is a world-class facility. But challenges, I mean, you know, anything, it's just like anything, trying to fit something into an old space. I mean, we ran into all sorts of crazy things there, trying to make things work and constantly changing things around and moving things around and that sort of thing. And then just, you know, it's not what people were used to doing, you know, fitting a production studio inside of a corporate headquarters
right.
was not something that was right. done. So right. we ran into, you know, brick walls all the time, but, you know, this was something that was really championed and really was important. And so, you know, we were tasked to do it and given every resource to do it. So, you know, that made it a lot easier.
Well, it sounds like a big space, but really, depending on the project, your space requirements will vary. So I'm sure there were times when you needed to expand outside of the studio and probably wished you had a Mandalorian volume to work in front of, which would have been great. What were some of the properties that you developed content for at that time, early in those Hasbro Studio days? What were they focused on pushing as far as toy lines and brand considerations?
Well, what it first was a lot of sizzle videos. So we would, you know, when you go to Toy Fair or whatever, there would be a lot of videos that needed to be done for that. And then you know, they were smart about letting us get our feet wet, you know? So we started small and started moving up and moving up and moving up into larger and bigger and more complex productions. But really, we touched every single brand. You name it. Transformers, Mr. Potato Head, G.I. Joe, anything you could think of. If it's a Hasbro brand, we, in one way or another, it came through there and we touched it. So, you know, I always looked at it as, you know, we're a business in a business. The brand teams are our customers and we're there to create great content for them. So we really touched every brand out there.
That's great. A lot of variety then. You had to pivot between Transformers one day and then My Little Pony the next and understand both of those properties in depth so that you put them both in the best possible light.
Definitely. But the people who are running those brands, they live them, and they know them. They're, right. Hasbro, they have the best people. I mean, they have really, really good people that really, really care. So, you know, it makes your job a lot easier when you're working with people who really, really care about it and are really knowledgeable in what they're doing.
Let's fast forward to Masamoto Media. One of the projects that stood out to me immediately was your award-winning stop-motion animation series that you produced for John Deere Monster Treads. The set for that series was phenomenal. We're talking about a miniature farm set, rolling hills, that's just massive. How much space did that take up? Take us into the complexities of creating that series and some of the challenges that you overcame there.
Yeah, well, I mean, we did it in one of my spaces. I have two 2,000 square foot studios, and it took up one of them. So 2,000 square feet it took up. But yeah, those sets were done by Larry Sampson at Devilfish Films. He built all those in his barn up in western Massachusetts. So the guy's a genius. He creates these kind of things for several different people and several different production companies. So the guy is really good. I guess honestly, the biggest challenge is we did it, you know, like pandemic-ish time. So,
right,
you know,
right.
that was tough. So it was, you know, literally there was three of us there at a time working, and we just couldn't have more people. We had to keep it to a very small crew. So it was just myself and Renan, who is our DP, who was there the whole time, and Dave Steben, who was also an ex-Hasbro employee, who did all the manipulating of all the characters. Every single movement you see there, Dave Steben's hands touched it and moved it, you know. Right. And we also had Francesco Dragoni, who stepped in for Renan while Renan had to go out for a while working as DP too. But that was it. And my wife, Katie, who made all the props. Other than that, that's the only people that set foot in there. So yeah, it was challenging. I mean, it really was. It was a lot of work, but it was a lot of fun. We had a great time. And it's funny, if you watch the episodes, you can see we got pretty good at it, like towards the last episodes, you know, they look better and better and better and better. And then by the last episode, you're like, oh my God, there's nets flying through the air catching fish. What's going on? But it was a lot of work. The biggest challenge other than the pandemic was just the scale of the toys, because the toys are all at different scales. Our characters are at one scale. So what you see is there's a lot of compositing and of those elements in there to make the toys fit the people, to make the toys fit the space, to make the characters fit the cars and all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, because it was all, sometimes the car would be just a little tiny thing and they had to interact with a figure that's 4 inches high or 3 inches high. So we had to composite all that stuff together in post. And David Davignon, who was our editor on it, I mean, he killed it. He edited the whole thing himself. So, you know, again, you're talking about five people, six people that touched it, you know, every day. That's a little production there.
that is an amazingly small crew for such a meticulous stop motion series. That really is. Let's talk about scale for a little bit, because you could be involved in something like Wicked Big Sports. You've zoomed the camera back. It's all about big and large and people playing in large areas of land. And then you can zoom in on something like the John Deere Monster Treads and go very small. How do you think about a project from the beginning? If you look at a product and you're considering the best way to show that product to capture the viewer's attention, how are you thinking about filming that product just right off the bat when you're introduced to a new project?
I mean, the first thing I want to know is who uses this? Who plays with it? You know, how do they play with it? You know, how would a kid use this toy or this game or whatever? So that's really the first thing I'm thinking of. But when it comes to, like, you know, something like Wicked Big, for example, where we're outside and we're shooting a bunch of people running around, I mean, that's just kind of stuff that, you know, as a someone who is in production and film and that sort of thing, that's a natural thing for you. What do I want to show? What's the best way to show it? How's the best way to film this happening? It's kind of a second nature thing, really. I don't really look at it and say, this thing's a little tiny thing. What's the best way to do it? I don't really think of that so much. I mean, I'll look at it like, if I'm shooting like, you know, a small toy that's like a Beyblade, for example, or something like that, or something that's, I'll think of it like, how does it have to look? I mean, if you want it to look really high end, I'm going to say, okay, we need to shoot this like a watch, you know? Mm-hmm. Okay. So it's a big, intricate lighting setup. We want to get a lot of, you know, good reflections on it and that sort of thing, and just really make it sparkle. So, I mean, you know, I don't necessarily think toy. I think what will make this object look the best in the way that it's meant to be played with.
John, another aspect of your company is your partner, your wife, Katie McGee. She's been involved in projects with Macy's and Honda, really outside of the toy industry. So I want you to talk about the balance that you two bring to Massimoto Media that enhances the offerings that you guys can bring.
Yeah, I mean, Katie is, she's an amazing art director, and she handles all our props, all of our set design, all that sort of thing. She's got a pretty good resume, did commercials for Honda and Macy's and all that sort of thing when we were in New York, before we moved here. She's also, a master's degree in fine art, a metal sculptor. So she's like extremely handy person to have around, because she can make anything out of nothing, basically. Sometimes I'll be, walking around the house, I'm like, why are like four empty toilet paper rolls sitting here? You know, it's like, I'm going to make something out of those. Don't throw them away, you know? And sure enough, they turn into something, a couple weeks down the road in somebody's project. So yeah, we got a good thing going, her and I, because, you know, I don't do what she does and she doesn't do what I do. And it really, it's the client definitely benefits from it, because, you know, for example, I was just mentioning before how we just finished a project. Katie worked 10 days just on building small props for this thing. And when the client showed up and they looked at everything that she made, they were just absolutely blown away by what she had built. And it was all out of, you know, like I said, those toilet paper rolls, that stuff that was laying around, stuff she got at Home Depot. You know, she's got this great vision for turning something, turning nothing into something. So, and she's just got the eye, that artist's eye, you know?
You know, and that's another aspect of toy video that a lot of people don't think about, is the miniature sets that are required. If you want to make something look like it's in the brand environment, we have to build those miniature sets to do that. It's a great skill to have. Yeah. What are the challenges of building all of those miniature sets, making them look good on video? Katie, obviously an extremely creative person and a great person to have on task there. Yeah. Talk about just miniaturizing your video work.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's like, it's just having someone who has that vision, you know, and I'm not saying that person is me, you know, it's definitely her. Because of her art background, she's always got just this great aesthetic vision about what she's doing. So she can kind of see it already in her head, what it's going to look like on set and what size it needs to be. I mean, believe me, she's in here taking measurements of things all the time. Okay, I need to make this this big, that big, whatever. And however she does it, whatever voodoo she does there, she's able to really see that before I certainly can. And then when you plop the camera in front of me, like, damn, that looks good, Katie. What, you know, you're right. It's like, you know, you're always like always surprised by it. So I don't know why I am after this many years. She's like done so many great things with me, but yeah, I mean, she's just got the vision, you know. So it's the trick is having a Katie on it. Yeah, I don't know any other way to do it other than that, you know.
It's that talent of taking nothing and turning it into something.
Turning it into something, exactly.
And with anything that you're working with, John, especially in toys, most of the time we've got kids on the set. That is a whole other struggle that I think folks outside of children's entertainment or the children's industry don't really understand is kids on the set. We can deal with some tremendously professional kids, but there are special considerations for dealing with kids on the set. So talk to the listeners for a little while about how do you handle kids on the set? How do you find the right talent to reflect their brand? And just some of the challenges of dealing with kids on the set, even as professional as they are.
It's funny. I mean, I guess I'm okay with kids. I mean, I raised two and they both made it. So, you know,
filming kids is like raising kids. Is that what you're saying, John?
Well, no, I don't know. I'm saying that maybe, you know, I'm not bad at it because, you know, mine made it. But I don't know. When you have babies, they're babies are going to do what they do. You know, you just try to shoot them in the morning and they're going to do it. But when they get to about six or seven, you can reason with them a little bit. And, you know, but the key for me is just try to make it fun. Try to make it fun. And, you know, if I'm shooting for toys, for example, you know, if I have to, you know, really coax a kid to have fun with a toy, there's probably another problem there. But generally, you know, like what I do with kids, for example, I'll have a list of things that I need to get shot, specific things. Maybe it's how the toy's activated, whatever it is. I'll go off and just hit that whole list of everything and make sure I get all those things. And then I'll just let the kids play with the toy and just shoot everything they do from multiple lengths. And so I know that I've got that coverage and I'm going to go back and forth between their faces and their hands and the toy and their hands and the face. And I know I'm going to get what I want. If the toy's good, the kids are going to deliver for you. They're going to have fun playing at it. And it doesn't hurt that I bring my dogs to set too. So they kind of like those too. But really, if the toy's good and the game is good, the kids will have fun doing it and it makes your job 1,000 times better. But I'm not going to lie, I've had some duds in there. And sometimes kids are scared or, you know, they're afraid to be away from their parents or whatever. And I'll try to like put their mom right where I want the kid to look. If that helps them, you just kind of got to have that little bag of tricks with you and bribe them. I mean, hey, if you do a really good job, I'm going to give you a toy when you leave. You know, bribery goes a long way as well. But and finding the right kids is, you know, I have a relationship with Model Club in Boston, and I get the majority of my talent out of them. I know them. They know me. They know what I'm looking for generally. And they'll usually pull out a really nice group of kids for us to choose from. So honestly, knock on wood, 85% of the time, I've been lucky with good talent. So no complaints. And then kids, and I like kids. Kids are fun. I mean, it's toys. I mean, you know, we want to do it. We want to take it seriously. We know we want to sell that toy. We want to create the best possible content for that toy. But you know what? You got to have fun doing this too. Otherwise, you know, we should all be doing something else if we're not having a good time doing this. I mean, I always tell the guys, it's like when it's a bad day or something, I was like, look, we could all be hanging drywall today. You know, it's like, so let's enjoy this. And we do. So we have a lot of fun, lot of fun doing it.
That's it. No, 100% agreed. And I think the brilliant nugget there is a well-trained dog kid wrangler. I think that's brilliant. I really do. I think that's the key to some of this. There's nothing better than the reaction of a kid and a dog together. It makes me think about the pet industry and how easy their jobs must be.
I don't know, man. I mean, I got to tell you, it's like a lot of those bad kids are better behaved than my dogs, but the kids still seem to like them, so it's good.
That's great. John, how has the video industry changed during your career? You know, companies are using video in different ways, and I think it's more important now in a lot of ways. At least there's more outlets for great video, not only TV, but YouTube and Instagram and TikTok and all of the ones that we try to tap into to build an audience. Video is still very important in the industry, but how has it changed? How are the requests different now from toy companies than they were 10 years ago?
Well, I mean, no one ever said to you, I want this to look like it's user generated content 10 years ago, you know, so not, but now I hear that, you know, like, make it look like it's user generated, you know, but because there's so many platforms, you know, and the pandemic is another thing. It really ramped up the need for video content. E-commerce video, I mean, is very, very important. We do a lot of e-commerce video. And, you know, that's like that last click, you know, before somebody buys it, is that they watch that video on wherever they're looking at, Amazon or Walmart or whatever, Target.com, any of those. They're going to look at that video. And that's generally going to be the last click that they make before they buy that thing. So e-com videos have become really important. And then just branded entertainment is huge for brands. I mean, I just finished another little series for another. I can't mention anything, but 9 episodes for another company for one of their brands. And we just finished it last week. So, I mean, they're understanding that, you know, their video is the best way to reach the most amount of people. And at the end of the day, these things need to be entertaining. So a commercial needs to be entertaining. And I mean, say this about anything, any single thing I shoot, and I'll tell this to the client. I said, look, you know, I know we want to show this electrical box or whatever that you're trying to sell. But at the end of the day, this video has to be entertaining. Someone's got to want to watch it, you know? Right. So, I mean, I just try to look at it like that. I mean, I always look at it like I'm creating entertainment regardless of what it is. And again, there's all these platforms for video. It's become way more important than it ever was. I mean, it just shows you the vision of Hasbro back in the day. You know, they knew this was coming and they prepared for it. So, you know, I was lucky to get hooked up with really smart people who were able to put me on a course that allowed me to do what I'm doing today. So, I mean, I said it was my master's degree. I owe a lot to my time there and to the people there who guided me into what I'm doing right now. So they saw it coming, they knew it, and here it is today. It's more important than ever.
John, you talked about user-generated content, and I'm curious your perspective. We live in a world where a kid could shoot a video in his backyard, and it could be seen millions and millions and millions of times. A company could produce a multi-million dollar production, and maybe it doesn't get off the ground. Is there some resistance from the profession towards amateur videos that can be that successful? Is there an idea of collaboration there? Are we happy about that sort of environment that we find ourselves in where an amateur video can just take off and be a phenomenal hit, drive sales? Yeah. What are your thoughts on that?
I think you got to tip your hat to them, you know? I mean, you could be mad about it. You could be mad about it. Say, oh, how'd that little kid make that video and all these people are watching it and I just, you know, spent all this time doing this thing. But I mean, I think, you know what? They beat you. I mean, that, at the end of the day, yeah, I think you got to say they won, you know, on that one. So it, and you know, guess what? Savor the flavor, and they should enjoy that, because they did a good thing. But it's like, you know what? It's to come in here and do this day in and day out and come up with ideas constantly.
Right, right.
It is not easy, man. It is not easy, because, you know, you're always trying to come up with something different. I mean, everything I do, I always try to put like one thing into it that's like, you know, something that is gonna, people will look at it and say, oh, that was really cool. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. No matter what it is, I try to think of one thing that I could stick into it. And I'm not gonna lie, there's some repeats in there, but you know, because there's only so many tricks in the bag. But no, I mean, I really don't resent it. You know, I think if you're smart, you're looking at it and you're learning from it and you're saying, okay, what nerves did they hit here that was so good?
Yeah. Why did it take off like that? What was it about viewing that video that was so attractive that just drove those numbers? Yeah.
Yeah. It was entertaining for whatever reason. It was entertaining. It struck some kind of chord and it was entertaining and, it got the message across, and who knows what they put into it. Sometimes I watch them and I'm like, man, that's really good. You know? So yeah, I mean, you tip your hat to them and say, all right, we're going to try something maybe sort of like that sometime, you know?
Sure. Sure. You know, and as much as the technology has advanced and we all have cameras now on us all the time, and anyone can produce some sort of video content, the technology for the professionals has advanced also. I'm thinking about things like I mentioned previously, the volume on The Mandalorian, where now we can travel to any location that we can create and project it on this massive screen behind the actors. It gives them the feel of being there, and it really cuts down and saves on the travel time and on setup. And so I'm curious, what kinds of technology are you looking forward to integrating, or are you integrating in your new videos? And what's the future of technology look like in the video industry?
Well, I mean, I think you hit on it. It definitely is that virtual production is a huge thing. But it's something I have not done. I mean, we've used large format projectors and used those as backgrounds before. But being able to, you know, integrate the camera moves into it and have the background move as well, that's a whole nother animal. The technology and the amount of places you can do that is still, you know, fairly limited and still fairly expensive to do that. So, you know, like everything else, it's going to probably come to a point where it's more workable for a smaller company like myself. But at this point, it's not there. I mean, I'm like one of these companies that's like, you know, I get mad because I have to buy new cameras every 2 years because that changes on me. You know?
Right, right.
But you do, because, you know, it's like, it's, you know, everything was like HD and now it's 4K and now all of a sudden it's 6K and cameras now are 8K. And it's like my eyes are 60 years old, you know, 4K is enough K for me at this point. You know, I can see 4K just great. I don't know if I can see any better than 4K at this point without a new prescription. But the thing that I'm really looking forward to, and we just started exploring, was looking to buying a robotic camera arm, like a Bolt system, which,
nice.
Is, you know, yeah, if you're familiar with that. Just because that's something that could work a lot for us in the toy industry, just having that repeatable moves and that sort of thing. And I have a motion control system now, but just going to that higher end system is something we're looking at exploring right now. Although, I mean, I did mention that I'm 60 years old, so I'm looking at like retiring in the next, like, you know, maybe 4 years or so. So I don't know how much I want to invest. You know, I might need that for my apartment in Italy.
Oh, always good to just have a boom arm laying around somewhere. You never know when you might need it.
You never know.
John, I know you're always working on projects outside of toys. Are there any projects you want to talk about here and publicize?
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you about a little film I did with my crew and some other friends, a little film we made called The Bend, which was about time travel and some kids who grew up in the 80s and basically, someone sends an iPhone back in time to them and to try to save them from some little thing that's coming after them. That was called The Bend. But the thing I'm working on right now is a documentary that I started before the pandemic about the alternative music scene in Cleveland, Ohio in the 80s. I started working on that. And of course, the pandemic kind of sidelined me, but we've just picked that back up again. And we're starting to get going on that again. And we just got to travel to a few places and shoot a bunch of people. But there was a really amazing music scene in Cleveland, Ohio in the 80s, as far as alternative music. And we're just trying to capture that and tell that story and bring that in as a feature length documentary. But, you know, other than that, I'm just busy making my toy videos and all that kind of stuff. So it's all good.
Very cool. Where can people see your other work, this documentary, et cetera?
Yeah, they can go on to Vimeo and just search The Bend and it'll pop up. And the other one, it'll be a while. So we've got about a year to shoot some stuff on that yet. And that will be called We Came From Rust.
We Came From Rust. Well, we'll be looking out for that. It sounds great. How can people reach out to you, get to know more about your company, hire you, and get involved?
Just go to MasimotoMedia.com. You'll see all our contact information there. You can see what we do, check out some of our work, meet the people. And yeah, we're out there. And, you know, we do toys, people. So hit us up.
Indeed you do. John, thanks for coming on, man. This has been fun.
Been my pleasure. Thanks a lot.
All right. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Take care, man.
Thank you for tuning in to the Power Kid Podcast. If you like what you hear, subscribe so that you never miss an episode. And leave a good review on iTunes. This helps us find more great listeners just like you. Remember also to check out the other shows that are a part of the Adventure Media and Events Podcast Network family. This show is brought to you by the Power Kid Design and Development Team. We are a full-service design and development studio serving the toy and game industry for over 20 years. Our partners, large and small, rely on us for invention, concept development, packaging, branding, prototyping, and much more. You can find me on my LinkedIn page, check out the website at powerkiddesign.com, or email me directly, phil@powerkiddesign.com. I am always happy to connect and help you develop your next great product. It's been an honor to spend this time with you today. Now go out and make something great, and remember, you are creative because you were created. God bless, and I'll see you next episode.